Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This educational offering is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
Bruce, you play dumb so well, you just have us all convinced.
Hey, I'm right here. Hey.
That's a bad way to start the class, isn't it?
No, it's just Bruce.
Wait a minute, no, there's a reply here. Let's see, to address the situation.
From the University of Ohio, I printed it out from the other day.
What do you mean
21.
When you say that?
Excellent.
Nice. I'm going to have him fold it up and put it in his pocket so when we're out in public, he has the right response.
That's right. That's great. So so tell me more about your conversation from last week, since you were here and I wasn't. What has stuck with you from our conversation, other than that you need some active bystander skills in your pocket? Was that last week or is that this week we get active bystander skills? That's this week. Excellent. So that's what we can talk about.
There you go. Yeah.
Your conversation from last week with Deb. Deb's not going to be able to join us this evening. Tell me what has stuck with you from last week's conversation.
It has stuck with me, not only from last week, but from all the weeks, that I apparently have a little more sensitivity to this than I thought. I thought I was about average, but I've continued to notice the number of things that people say about which they are just clueless. And there might, in some cases, not be any point in even addressing the issue.
So the knowledge of this material you're talking about.
Yes.
And
I've had some training in it, but mostly I think I grew up in a household where my parents had a very unusual sensitivity to that stuff for their time.
Yeah. And so how do you navigate the space between what you know and where your understanding is and the understandings or lack thereof that you may encounter with other folks?
The short answer is that going clear back to week one, I was saying, I'm not sure it's my job to educate everybody. That isn't quite the way I said it, but that's the nutshell. And I'm liable to just try to take them at their best, or know that everybody that makes mistakes and that probably I say things that I haven't thought of too, and I try to just let it go unless they actually mean something bad, and then I'll see whether it's worth bringing it up in the context.
Yeah,
I'm a chicken.
So it is a complicated question to figure out kind of what's your place in addressing what someone else may be saying and or doing. Yeah. What else is sticking with folks from last week? And that could be last week's Monday night conversation. So you get two full weeks of material to deal with here, either from last Monday's conversation or from the week of material that you've covered.
In your absence, we talked a lot about you, but we can't.
I expected probably you would, yeah.
But we were very tactful.
tried to be tactful.
You know, you got to work with what you've got in front of you, right?
Well, we were impressed that pastors had the month of October to kind of recognize them. We didn't know that your lobby was that strong.
You didn't know who I was until October, yeah.
No, I think there was a birthday when we met you.
That's right.
Ended in a zero, right?
That's right. Yeah, that whole October Pastor Appreciation Month is always kind of a weird trip for me, because it's nice to be all recognized and feel special, and it's also like, I don't know, the feeling like everybody like has to appreciate me for a month.
One out of 11 isn't
yeah.
too bad.
Yeah, if I'm appreciable 8% of the time, I'm doing pretty well, right?
Yeah,
right. We can do a pastor ignoring month next week. See how that next year. See how that comes out.
I thought that's what the other 11 were.
I thought that's about what you were going to say.
Well, okay. Yeah, go ahead, Warren.
No, before we leave, I have a lot of empathy for pastors in churches where there's only one ordained pastor. And not that Marcy isn't help for you, but in terms of several years back, we had like John Severson and Bernie Sailor. And I think this is my opinion. I think they were good for each other. When one was down, the other one was up, or when one was, not that either one of them was down that much, but as solo pastors, I really don't know how you guys, who pastors the pastor, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. I want you to know, the congregation is thinking of you and cheering you on, as it's a kind of a lonesome task at times, I'm sure.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you. Nicely said, Warren.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's I think, Nathan, the more we are involved with you, the more we appreciate your whole realm of thoughts and thoughtfulness, and your speaking is very good.
Well, thank but you.
That's off the subject from last week's meeting. Somewhat.
That's last week was still during Pastor Appreciation Month, so everything there. Fits, right?
There you go. Yeah.
Go ahead, Bev.
What notes did Deb leave you? We'll help refresh our memories.
Yeah, okay. So
you forget we're older than 40.
So Bev said we discussed justice, health, education, and early childhood. Especially talking about education and justice. Talked about, John told everybody about CASAS, C-A-S-A-S, whether you pronounce just, the acronym or not.
It's just CASA. Then the plural will be CASAS. It's court-appointed special advocates.
There you go.
Yeah.
And some conversation about how how those relationships might work. The sense of how do we continue kind of expanding our sense of the world? Any pieces of that conversation that you want to bring into tonight's conversation? Or pieces of material from last week's curriculum that you want to throw at us?
I especially was impressed, and I forget, I'm thinking it was Friday, where one of our activities was the University of Ohio or Ohio State University, and it was talking about. And interestingly enough, it was written in 2017, 3 years ago. But being an active bystander, and that is something that I feel I encompass, or I face that here more often than a lot of the other things that seem more obtuse to me. So how to be it, They gave us a plan, and it's how to be active. Do this, think about this. And it, I, because Bruce doesn't happen to be on our list, so I asked Carrie to, you know, put him on the list for these meetings. But I've been forwarding him everything that we get. And thank you. That is exactly, I mean, it was beautiful. Identify the emergence of bias. Well, it's not always just racism. There are all kinds of biases. And that third bullet point, take action. And it's like, oh, I couldn't get to it quickly enough and to see. And then like Bruce even used, he was reading it 10 minutes before our meeting tonight. but, you know, it's the things that we can say to when we're in a small group. When you hear someone and John, maybe you were saying it or Warren, that there is a way we can interject and be active without saying, what did you say? You know, I mean, there's things that you can, and I need those exact little verbiages. So those are, I thought that was huge to me. In fact, I've already told 3 people about this, and I forwarded one to my physical therapist. I was talking with them about it, and it's just, it was like, wow.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I have felt a lot of it is more corporate addressing in this program. But other than that, when I can find something that I can grasp and use and tangible, I like that. And I don't know, do you guys find that as well? Does anybody else notice that?
Yeah, I read that too, and I thought it was very helpful, the examples. And
yeah, that's, uh-huh. Yeah. And I think it's kind of like it gives us tangibles, mm-hmm. and just to know how to do it.
Yeah.
A, B, C, it's easy.
Did anybody happen to follow up on the suggestion I gave at the coffee meeting after church yesterday? I don't expect you did. The suggestion was that there is a podcast. It's called On Being. And it is, and Nathan, I think you nodded last time I said something about this, but it is a very smart woman who has very smart conversations with various people about philosophies. This one happened to be on Sunday morning when I woke up, and I didn't even hear all of it. And then I tried to read through all of it today, and I kept getting interrupted. But if you want to get her stuff, it is on, well, you can go to WOI because they broadcast it. It's also called onbeing.org. And then if you were looking for this particular one, I think it's the one dated October 29th or something like that. But it's a discussion between a man who has written for years about the same kind of stuff we've been discussing, implicit bias in particular, and Krista, because she, as she's told us, grew up in, I always want to say Lake Wobegon, Mankato, but she didn't know until she moved away from Mankato that Mankato was the scene of the biggest massacre in North American history. And it was perpetrated by the U.S. cavalry at the orders of President Lincoln in 1862, and they hanged 39 Indians. And I was going to go look up. I've heard of it. I was going to try to remember what the the point was, but I think it was just probably for making trouble on the prairie. But in Mankato, it isn't even talked about. It wasn't even talked about in school, because apparently there was a collective decision that they were going to quit talking about it, so they could keep getting settlers coming out. And there comes the phrase settler colonialism. But I think we all have things like that. I didn't know much about some of the things that went on in Mason City until I was pretty much an adult. And I'm not saying they're necessarily bad things, but we had ethnic communities that I didn't even know about because they kept to themselves.
Yeah, that most recent On Being that you were listening to was with John Bewin.
Yes.
And we actually heard from him our very first week. I played that podcast for you, and we were listening to just the conversation piece that that he had with a Black friend of his. John Bewin is white, and he was having a conversation with a Black friend of his about kind of the experience of race and kind of the reality of race as a social fact, even though it's not a biological category that makes sense in terms of kind of human genetics. But it is a social reality. So the pieces that I've seen from John Bewin is kind of getting at what it means for us as white people, what it means to be white. And what that has done to us, including things like this judicial massacre of these Lakota men in, what was it, 1863 or 4, right?
I think it was during the Civil War.
It was right. In the midst of the Civil War. And so this history is something that we, because of the way that whiteness has kind of conditioned us, we are so uncomfortable with that we can't sort of acknowledge this history and act constructively about it. And that's part of what Bewin is trying to get at. And honestly, Bev, I really appreciate what you said about the, you know, when we came to the active bystander set of responses, sort of as a tangible thing that we can do with all this, right? And for me, it's really important to have a specific tangible, like there is something I can start to do here. And at the same time, the way that that our white fragility makes us interact with the ideas, the realities of racism, that's actually part of why I thought it was important to spend as much time as we did with these institutional structures that make race a social fact, even though it's a biological fiction. Because then that gives us that gives us the ability to see that this is a thing that is there. And it's not just about, well, I didn't mean to say that, or so-and-so surely didn't mean to say that. It almost doesn't matter, right?
It's so normal. It just kind of spills out, and they don't hear themselves.
Right.
And that's just to bring that awareness back to them. I have a question, though. You mentioned our white fragility. What is that? I think I'm getting the impression whites are, I mean, we're just, all there and all overwhelming and all, you know, like foreign countries think of us, but what is white fragility?
That's actually that was a pretty good description of it. So
okay, but that's not fragile, right?
So there's kind of a set of sort of emotional reactions that that white people tend to have when they are confronted with the fact of racism in their own self. And it's not their job to do this, but people of color would be able to tell you exactly what that is. And it is the
arrogance.
So there's an arrogance piece, but it's the what happens when you poke the arrogance. So it tends to manifest as, and I feel like I should pull this up and get you the right list here, but it tends to manifest as things like defensiveness and denial. That's not what I meant. Or, well, I didn't own the slaves. So why are we talking about reparations, right? Not that reparations by itself doesn't need a conversation, right? But, oh, we can't possibly talk about that because it's not about me. Don't let it be about me, right? Like there's a kind of that, you don't say that part necessarily.
It's all part of the Black Lives Matter, all lives matter.
Yeah.
Don't all lives matter? Not Black Lives Matter, because we're never questioned as being the minority. So we've gotten so used to being on the top of the pile that when anybody pokes that pile, we react defensively when it isn't meant to make us react defensively.
So, and it's the fragility. Yeah. And it's the way that dealing with conversations about racism, dealing with questions about, why did I move to the part of town that I moved to as opposed to some other part of town? That I'm gonna try to justify why I did that. Now I may have perfectly good reasons for it, right? But white fragility is gonna tend to push me to not be curious about what those reasons are, but try to tell you what those reasons are, right? And not be curious about what was the impact that had on other people. But to tell you why I'm not at fault here. So white fragility is sort of it's like your overzealous defense attorney who really needs to just stipulate a little bit. Yeah, you know, we screwed up sometimes. We're in a system that leads us to continue screwing up. It can manifest in when the conversations get difficult or the traumas happen. It can also manifest as, you know, just emotionally breaking down and either checking out of the conversation or bringing yourself right to the center of the conversation. So for instance, a lot of the people who felt like they needed to say something after George Floyd was murdered, including myself, there was a goodly amount of white fragility in the things that I felt like I needed to say after that. But that tendency to be like, well, I have to have something to say so I can what? So I can prove that I'm one of the good white people, right?
You're justifying. You're just trying to justify.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so the alternative approach that white fragility gets in the way of is the approach of saying, yeah, I can recognize where I have been part of the problem. I can recognize where I have hurt other people. I can recognize where I have participated in all of these systems that we've been talking about. And I can't fix that. I certainly can't justify that. But I can recognize the harm that's been done and then start to work to repair it.
Thank you.
But you took the risk and you took the lead when you went downtown to talk at the Capitol building. Not very many people jumped on board to do that.
Well, it was
a there. are additionally a lot of places that I have not jumped in that I otherwise could have. And some of those are, you know, obviously there are places that each of us are called into and places each of us happen not to be called into at any given time. But there are certainly places and relationships that I've just been too shy to go to. Shyness is a way that white fragility manifests. So think about your active bystander situation, right? You've all got sort of your, you know. You know, you've got your so-and-so says something at a family gathering that, you know, oh boy, you knew they were going to say it, but now they did. You know, any of a number of other situations, right? Somebody, you know, somebody says something, we call them off color, right? Yeah. Off color remarks. That's probably a really problematic phrase. So I'm just going to flag that and not unpack it.
Good point.
I don't even know where that came from. You know, but you hear something said in the produce aisle, right? And what do you do? Well, part of what you do and part of why the second two bullet points, so you've got identify the emergence of bias, right? Like you can feel that when like the hair stands up on the back of your neck, right?
Right.
But then decide to address the situation and take action. And somewhere between identifying that so-and-so said or did something that they ought not have done and addressing the situation, that's where we tend to get really shy.
But how many times do they not realize they're saying it? So tactfully bring the awareness to the person of how it's being perceived, whatever they said.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where, right? Some of those strategies are really great, right? Because they've got things like, oh, what do you mean when you say that? You know,
That's on this backside.
I've got it right up here on my other screen. You know, oh, could you explain that to me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's because then that puts the work back on them where it belongs.
Yeah, right. Rather than me doing this.
And like having your cheat sheet in your pocket. I love that they made this a you know, single sheet front and back, so you really can print it out.
Yes,
a little. And carry it around.
Yes, that's right. You can download it to your phone and mark it as a wallpaper item.
That's right.
So you have it right there.
That's right. So to have some of those, they're there as sort of ways to get past what the sort of the go along to get along way of being white does. And I'm trying to be really specific about sort of, I'm talking about kind of a cultural whiteness here, right?
Right.
And the ways that in order to live in a world where racism is baked into, I'm stealing somebody else's words here, baked into the cake, you know, to live comfortably in a world that is so defined by racism in so many ways, kind of requires for us to pretend it's not there a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it uncomfortable when we have to stop pretending it's not there and say, actually, that's there.
I was going to say, I hear it out there. And it's not just racism. It's just like the paper says, oh, that's so gay.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hello, that's... You know, that again, it are the other prejudices that our generation, not including you, Nathan, are not aware I think.
Oh, my generation has plenty of prejudices we're also not aware of. So
I know it's about the okay, what's that term they use for us now? Okay, something the kids say. But anyway, I think I hear what you're saying. I hear exactly what you're saying. But that's where, when you asked, what was the piece that spoke to you? This shouted, both ears, stereo, big time. And I loved it. It was tangible. So.
Great.
And there was somebody else who mentioned they kind of look for the shorter things. I remember that from last week.
But that's right. You can invest a good chunk of time in this stuff, can't you?
Yeah. Certainly, but I know it's still there and I can go back and catch up on those weeks that I didn't get it. Because if a piece like this that I knew nothing about and decided to open it to check it out, because I figured it won't be 9 pages, that's where I think, you know, there's a lot more of that back there, the days that we weren't as involved. So anyway, thank you, Nathan, very much.
Terrific.
For all of the above.
Terrific. Good. I'm glad.
Me too.
Well, welcome, Deb. I promised everybody you wouldn't be here, but now you are. So that's great, too.
She just popped up out of her bed there.
Yeah.
That's her comfy seat.
It is a comfortable place to be for me.
That's good.
That's good. That's
glad
good.
I could make it for part of it. I didn't think I would be here, but I managed to be here.
We're glad you are. Good.
Yay.
So, so as Bev mentioned, all of the materials on all of the days are still there on the website. You can go back to anything you feel like you missed or anything you feel like you heard but didn't realize you were hearing at the time. Sometimes covering the same material again can allow more of it to land with you. You should also have seen in your day 21 email, everybody except for Bruce, that there's a there's a post-challenge survey. Mm-hmm. So now that you have been challenged by 21 days of equity, let them know what you learned, let them know what was valuable for you, and let them know what you're gonna do next, including carrying around your active bystander sheet. And there is also an inclusion summit, the 8th annual inclusion summit. This year it's going to be on Zoom a week from tomorrow. So Tuesday, November 10th. Get your Zoom on for the 8th annual inclusion summit.
8:30 to 4:30.
There you go. That's your day.
Long one.
It's a long one.
Yeah.
But it looks like the when they look at the speakers, when you look at the speakers that are going to be attending, it's nice because they have paragraphs about them and explaining who they are and what they do and gives you a little background. You get breaks, you get a lunch hour, you know, just go with you all the people in your little cloud and, you know, you run out and grab lunch together and you can visit amongst yourselves, but you only have a half an hour, so maybe you're better off just staying home for that lunch.
That's good. Yeah, order something to be delivered at the beginning of your half hour. Or make up your meat and cheese sandwich beforehand.
They also shared Heartland Youth Choir.
Yes!
A song that is phenomenal. I wondered if Elizabeth might have been involved in that.
I looked for her, but I didn't see her. It looked like older kids.
I didn't see her either. I know, and I wanted to enlarge it so I could look harder, but I couldn't. It's a video,
They gave the 3 or 4 schools that were involved. One, the only one in West Des Moines was Southwoods. And then Heartland Singers, Heartland something Singers, but it wasn't the church Heartland. Was something else. And there was a college,
the Heartland Youth Choir. That Heartland Youth Choir?
Yeah, I think so.
It did look older than the Heartland Youth Choir, though. Maybe there were schools also?
Yes.
I thought it was just the Heartland Youth Choir, which Elizabeth's involved in.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's why, Anne.
But they have several choirs of different ages.
Yeah.
But wasn't that from 19 as well? That was from 2019.
A year ago.
Yeah, it was at least a year ago, yeah.
For the...
Oh,
it was something about the guy who... the composer of the year or something like that. And but the best part was they had subtitles and you could understand. Because actually the sound echoed a little bit, and so you really couldn't tell the words, but when you're reading the words with it, it was really beautiful. There had to be 100 kids, 100 people in that choir. Pretty cool.
I also enjoyed the song that the Oak Ridge kids taped, kind of a rap song.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
That was pretty cool.
Friday, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I needed closed caption on that one too, because I couldn't understand everything.
When they're rapping, they talk a little fast, huh, Anne?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, and there's a tendency. This is another one of those racialized culture things that Euro-American culture tends to be very visual, very much about the written word. It's been identified as a way that white supremacy manifests. Because if you want to study an academic subject, you need a bunch of books written about that subject, right? And who were the only people who got to write all the books for, you know, at least several hundred years?
White men.
The white people.
White men in Europe. And then in North America, right?
Yeah.
When Europe discovered that there were human beings living elsewhere in the world, first they had to figure out whether they were human, and they didn't necessarily get that right in every instance, partly because they would find themselves encountering a culture that didn't write things down. And so these people clearly don't know anything, right? Because if they knew something, they would think to write it down. Well, that actually continues to play out in things like when we white people encounter rap. We tend to get just totally like deer in the headlights with all of these words going past us. Now, we'll listen to opera, have no idea what's even being said, right? But oh, that's fine, because it's from Europe. That's not what we think we're thinking. But let me just submit that may be what we're thinking. Or remember your first, you know, the first time you saw a performance of The Sound of Music or Carousel or South Pacific or, you know, that, you know, words being sung flying past you, often very quickly, but you're also not translating across a culture or across a race or across your own experience of that thing. And so you're more likely to kind of give some of those words the benefit of the doubt without being just thrown by, wait a minute, how do I interpret this? So this is actually, this is a way that, again, white supremacy manifests in academics, because if it's not written down, it doesn't matter, or culture, because if it's not being sung in a European language, it probably doesn't matter. Or if it's being sung, sung as spoken or sung fast by someone with brown skin, that's just weird and different. So there are all of these pieces that are, again, like, we didn't know we thought that, right? I didn't know I thought that until somebody pointed out after it was in July when Hamilton came out on streaming on Disney Plus. You know, and we had tried to listen to the soundtrack once and just couldn't keep up because we didn't know what was going on. And so we watched it on Disney Plus with the captions on underneath, and partly being able to see the characterizations helped us figure out what was actually going on in a way that I'm not sure the soundtrack would have. Somebody pointed out, now everybody's totally thrown by how fast they sing in Hamilton, and yet they can go listen to a Sondheim musical where the words are coming out just as fast, but because you're familiar with more of kind of the cultural context, or you're willing to believe you can be familiar with the cultural context, you can survive this better. Now, again, that's not to say that I'm a bad person, right? Like, this is not actually a goodness badness thing, but that was actually a piece of how that that culture of whiteness had existed in me and continues to exist in me. I still kind of need the picture of the words on the screen in order to keep up with what's being said. I watch all kinds of stuff with captions on and I can hear.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It helps.
Yeah.
I do too. Yeah.
Especially if you're wearing hearing aids.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so from a disability inclusion standpoint, this idea that somehow, oh, you must be some weird old person to need words on the screen. That why not just allow words on the screen? It actually doesn't take away that much of the experience, even if you can hear and understand all of the words that are being spoken. So that's another place where, you know, it doesn't hurt to ask the question, why would we be bothered by seeing that on, you know, by seeing the words captioned on the screen? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of layers to this stuff.
That's fascinating. I think hearing rap, I don't even put a skin color with that. It's just, I'm so busy trying to catch up on what they're saying. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's just but yes, it's a different jargon often. And we're not used to that in honky white Des Moines. I mean, I truly believe we don't get that input often enough, right?
We don't use the language they use in rap either. So
I was waiting for that to come out.
So there, right. we could do a whole thing on sort of the cultural dynamics of language and which words do we allow people to use and which words don't we allow people to use. So, but yeah, it's the ways that sort of the ways that we were sort of enculturated as white people, the ways that lives in us and continues to live in us as we encounter the not only the diversity of races and cultures around us, but the way that we have tended, we white people have tended to make other races and cultures assimilate to be more like us, whatever the us is in a given case. It means we have to continue being uncomfortable as we actually encounter and make room for the people who are already there. Mm-hmm.
I often wonder, do they want to be there? Is that our I mean, I'm our awareness, maybe, that we're trying to put ourselves there, but it's kind of tiptoe, don't you think?
So, does anybody have sort of off the top kind of responses to the one question of, do they want to be there? Do they want to be in relationship with us? Is that kind of?
Yes. Do they want to be with us? Do they want us with them? How do we meld the two? And that's exactly what this entire 21 days is about.
Yeah. So initial kind of responses to that.
My job as a teacher for a long, long, long time, you want to invite everybody to be accepted and be included. And there's oftentimes resistance that you encounter that, and you try a little bit harder to invite the kids to get on board, get on this ship, you know? So it's a tough gig when you get people from all kinds of cultures who aren't used to being invited to be included.
Yeah.
I thought the day 8, the allyship, was a really important piece and day for me because it discussed that. It talked about understanding your privilege, things you don't even worry about, that's privilege. I've never worried about being lesbian. I'm privileged. I haven't experienced that. And the LGBTQ, which was 16 or 17, also intrigued me because I don't have a lot of experience with that. I'm the majority of homosexual people, which may not even be a majority, but the most commonplace on television shows and movies and what have you. I've never experienced being in any of the other categories. And then to listen and learn and always being willing to listen and us before you jump in. And I am impulsive and jump in far too often. And wisdom comes the listening and pausing part to hear exactly what the other person is saying and to hear their story, their narrative. And then it said that you're going to make mistakes, apologize when you do. And ally is a verb. So just keep doing the work of 1 through 4. I thought that was pretty neat. I jotted that down in my notes because I thought I need to go back to that every day for the next couple of weeks so it gets ingrained in my head. And I think like that.
Next 21 days makes the habit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope we can come back and talk about this more than just ending tonight. Because we have to, or it's all going to just go by the wayside. And we're going to say, remember in 2020, we did that 21-day equity challenge, and none of us will remember all the pieces to it. There's been a lot to learn in a short chunk of time. And it's all been good.
I listened to an NPR, this reporter interviewed 3 Black people, 2 of whom are in small town Iowa. They weren't there originally, but this one woman married a white man in Washington, D.C., and he was originally from the small town, Cresco, I think. And so they moved to Cresco, but he's back in the military. So there's just... she and her 11-year-old daughter and 15-year-old daughter, and they talk about some of the prejudiced experiences they'd had with the school, but how well the school handled it. And I mean, it's just, and then she said one of the hospital workers was really good about getting people together and discussing it. And the other guy that was good, can't remember his name, but he's a reporter and he's been to different parts of Iowa. And he had some good things to say. He was talking about kind of this white fragility thing. He said, you know, I can tell when you're having these discussions, white people are really nervous about it because He says, because they're not secure, you know, and what's going on here. And I thought, boy, that's for sure. But anyway, the whole thing is almost an hour, but it was really good if you have a chance to listen to that.
I want to just, you know, we got these thoughts and I want them to share with you. I went back to Drake in 1970 to pick up my teaching certificate. I graduated in 66 with a general business degree and minor in economics, and my wife was teaching school. And I thought, why don't both of us teach school and have a Dairy Queen in Okoboji or someplace in the summer? Well, anyway, to make a long story short, I had a black woman professor in one of my education classes. I basically had to pick up some education classes and student teach. I'd say there's maybe 15 of us in the class, and we were all white, but she invited us to her home. And she lived, as I remember, it would be a little bit north and a little bit west of the Perkins, where the Presbytery office is in Urbandale. There's a lake out there, if I remember. And
yeah.
At that time, do the math, I was in 70, I was 27. And we went in her home, and I think we just had desserts or something. But you know, she wanted us to realize that the home in Urbandale that she lived in was just like the home that I was living in West Des Moines. I was a little older than some of the students, but that was the first time I was ever in a black person's home. Mm-hmm. But it helped me realize very similar. Now, she was educated, had a decent salary, and could afford it. And then in your absence last week, Nathan, I dwelled to an extreme probably how I have had more insight and broaden my knowledge with one-on-one. Like, for example, I had a convenience store. I had a black clerk that worked for me. So I had a lot of time to see her, you know, as an employee employer. And then one summer I had a black student work for me. He's a high school kid, basically sorting cans and bottles. Otis Killings was his name. And Otis would see Claudia and once a week when she'd come by to buy groceries. So Otis had a relationship with me as an employer. Then he also got to see my wife. And at that time, Nick was not in school. So he got to know Nick. So I think there again, Otis and I had some discussions and had a level of trust, just as Tammy, who was my clerk that would work the register. And I think what is effective for me is you need, if you even have to work at having opportunities to spend one-on-one with minorities. Mm-hmm. I don't think going to group meetings with you know, equal number of whites and equal number of blacks, and you get paired off or something. It's volunteering, or maybe it's a clerk at some store you go to. You have to develop these relationships one by one. I know it's going to take a heck of a long time to get to know a variety of people, but I think it does as much for the minority as it does for us white folk, and that we have a heck of a lot of similarities, way more in common than differences. And lo and behold, Otis Killings was a high school kid, and I saw him at the post office about 2 months ago, and he recognized me. And I'm trying to do the math. I closed the store. He worked for me probably in 85. So that's 35 years. I haven't seen this guy. 35 years. He just went on and on. How's Claudia? How's Mrs. Pitcher? You know, and Nick, you know, and I had pictures. And of course I asked him, and he has a large family and all that, you know. But I think, and I'm bragging here a little maybe, but I think I gave him some insight on what a typical white family, you know, we had a station wagon and Claudia was a stay-at-home mom with Nick and he got to know them and I got to know, I think I met one or two of his brothers. I don't think I ever met his mother, but I think to wrap this up, which I need to do, it works for me, opportunities where I've got some one-on-one time. And the longer you have that relationship, obviously the better, but, and I'd like to think that Otis was 15 or 16 at the most, at an impressionable age, that maybe, just maybe, Claudia and Warren Pitcher helped him get a feeling about what these white folk are all about. And the two that I had at my store. And once again, that's damn near 50 years ago that black professor invited us to her home. And I don't know how those opportunities come by, but look for them. Look for them. And with that, I'll wrap it up. And there again, in West Des Moines, or even just in Iowa in general, you know, you don't have the opportunities that you would have in other locations. But it's a kind of it takes time to build the trust. And it takes time to really let them get to know you. And I had the option, like I say, of seeing Otis every day for probably four months. And then I don't know how long Tammy worked for me, probably 2 to 3 years. That if you can find one-on-one opportunities with minorities, I think that pays big dividends. And you know, if it's good enough for Mother Teresa, she had some kind of a phrase about, you know, you just help one person at a time, you know, at the end of the year, maybe mm-hmm. you've helped quite a few. But, and once again, where do you find these opportunities? I'm a great one to suggest it, but I can't also tell you where to find them. But if you ever do, and we're talking about blacks, but not necessarily. I find that in Bruce and some of us have done some international travel. I'm not kidding you. I try to be an ambassador from Iowa. I wear a cap, IOWA, a gold cap with black letters, you know, right across it. So I'm proud to be in Iowa. And I like to have these people know a little bit, you know, Americans, my gosh, from the East Coast to the West Coast, you know, we're such a wide variety of personalities. And that Midwestern, they call it Minnesota nice, but it's more than Minnesota. It's a Midwestern kindness, if you will. I want them to know Iowa, Midwest, and whatever time on a cruise ship. You see that room steward a couple times a day, every day, the whole time you're on the ship, you know, that they go home knowing about a guy from Iowa. And I usually buy on sale whenever I can, t-shirts, inexpensive t-shirts, IOWA. I take them in all sizes and try to have them in Iowa colors. But on different people that I've got a good relationship, I try to leave them that as a souvenir. Here's something from this island that I want you to remember, and how much I enjoyed, you know, knowing you this short time and all that. And it's just a
it's cool.
Well, yeah. You can see I can't get my thoughts concentrated, yeah. but it evolved. See, it just evolved. Yeah. When I started traveling in 2004. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of Iowa. They're proud. They're wanting to show me their community. You know, and the more time, and of course, if I happen to be sitting at a bar with a cold beer in front of me out in the middle of Africa somewhere, you know, that's helped. You know, I'm a talker without beer. But then all of a sudden, they remember that guy from Iowa.
Yes.
Don't underestimate just the amount of time that you can spend with people. They're just curious as they can be. They're just envious, yes, And they're also curious. And I just want to tell them a little. I always have pictures. Well, Nathan, you've seen me in El Salvador. Pictures of my family. Pictures of my first car, 48 Ford. I forget what else. But anyway, and Nathan and Bruce, too, he's with me in El Salvador. I'm proud of my family. I'm proud of where I live, what I did as an educator.
Pam, you know? You were there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Don't forget, Pam and I had that experience. Pam,
you guys were all there together.
If Pam saw me showing
Mary and Russ and John were left over out already.
Well, you guys what I'm saying is, I know Nathan came up on me at a restaurant where I was out showing my pictures. I know Nathan walked up on me. I'm not sure Pam did, but Pam probably remembers our driver. Remember our driver that took us back to the airport and mm-hmm. Marie Michael thought we're going to be late. And I had our, I'm struggling for his name now.
Wilfredo.
Wilfredo.
And I gave him a English Spanish dictionary. And I was telling him about, you know, I just, you know, but there again, relationships, I'd seen him three times, I think three different times there again. And remember you and I didn't go climbing that mountain the first day?
Yes.
And he came over and was quite interested in my dictionary. That's when I got the idea to leave the dictionary with him.
And when we were at the school, all those kids, and it was time to leave, I found you because you had your hat on. It stood out.
It's easy to find that gold hat.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. Took so much time.
You always built relationships when Perry and I had foster kids. You were always one of the first people in church to come up and ask their name and get to know them a little bit. And Connor, I was talking to a couple weeks ago, and he said, asked me if I had a picture of him with his hat on. And he had a lot of hats. I didn't know what he meant. And he was talking, I think, about the hat you gave him. You gave him a cargo hat that we did VBS and that went with it. And you gave him your hat when you were done. You had two hats and Chris got one and Connor got one. Okay. And he remembered that hat. You built relationships any way you can. And you've done that with all of us.
And
you Bruce, know, whether it's.
And well, several of us have been educators. That's always the thing that we never know how many people you influenced and what it was that they remember. As educators, we're often, you know, I had more turnover than Bruce. He had the same group for the 9 months, but don't underestimate that. And back to this race relations and all that, a little, you know, it's too bad it's not more, but don't consider it insignificant, even if it is a small amount of time you're with them, and how people will remember that, or you'll catch them off guard, but you've got to take the initiative. And you talked about being shy, Nathan. I know you find this hard to believe, but one time I might have been shy, but it only comes with age and experience. I got nothing. And the same with Bruce, you know. Bruce doesn't know a stranger. Well, why should I hesitate? You know, and 99% of the time, you will not offend anybody by taking the initiative. Enough.
Yeah. If you are genuinely yourself and you are genuinely interested in the people around you,
they'll pick up.
That goes a long, long way.
Yes. Genuine. That's a wonderful word.
You said you reached out to minorities. There's a lot of white people who are lonely or needs too. So reaching out to all people is a goal.
That's right.
I'm gonna say yeah, and so yes, and loneliness is a the ways that we are sort of separated from each other just. I mean, obviously right now we're all in our little boxes, right?
And more than one.
We're number two.
Literally.
But you know, the ways that life tends to and that life in American culture tends to sort of separate us from each other. And so it takes work to sort of dig past that and get back to the place where we are in fact building these relationships with each other. And I'm gonna just lift up that that differences of race, differences of first language, differences of economics, differences of sexual orientation, differences of gender presentation, that these are all going to be additional things that make it hard to begin that conversation. So I don't want to ignore those, even as I'm acknowledging that having the conversations itself takes work. And so to be aware on both sides of that. Speaking of not having all the time in the world, I want to honor your all time and just appreciate the amount of time that we were able to spend together moving through this 21-day equity challenge. So you have two pieces of homework for next week. Your first piece of homework is to do whatever extra pieces of the 21-day challenge you want to dig back deeper into. But the second piece of your homework is to tell me what those pieces are. Because we've got a handful of weeks available to us between now and Christmas, which is like coming up a lot faster than I'm quite comfortable knowing. And so
one day at a time.
That's right. And so we could go back to some of the specific content if you're just like, oh my gosh, we didn't talk about this video or this piece of reading or what have you, and we really need to. Or you can say, this topic, I really want to understand more about how to be an ally, or I really want to understand more about LGBTQ issues and how I can interact with folks across the divide between being a cisgender straight male and everybody who's on different sides of different lines from me. So I can dig, I can dig up resources on all kinds of stuff to throw at us. So do whatever extra back homework you wish you had done. But especially let me know where you really would like to dig deeper. And you can chew on that and email me if you like. I did a little bit of sort of preliminary looking around for things that I thought might be productive places for us to go. I have a guess at where we'll go for next week, although I haven't actually watched the material yet. But a sort of a look at just kind of what kind of documentary look at what life during COVID has been like, not only for each of us, but for people in more different settings in life. And the way that this thing that has separated us from each other has also brought us together. That feels like a nice place to go based on the conversation that we just had. So I'm going to offer that to us for next week, unless somebody's like, here's the thing we really need to do. So you've got a few days to give that to me before I prep this other thing.
Last week, I brought up the Warren Buffett. He won the ovarian lottery, and then we all have won that lottery. And before this happened here, I gave everybody an email that shows that in detail. So read your email that how blessed we all are.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I saw that. opportunities and not having to learn and be concerned about if we have our hood up or not, or if the car is going to be tagged because someone not in a white skin is driving. And I just, that just blows me out of the water. All the things that go along that I heard a Black mom talking about when, since her son was like 6 or 7 years old, giving him all the rules that he needs to know when he goes out on the street. And I thought, wow, wow. You know, we're in that quadrant. I don't know what I don't know. You know, there's time, there's those four quadrants in life where, you know, you go from not knowing totally to getting a taste to maybe graduating a little more. And then it's like, oh boy, it hits you between the eyes.
Yeah.
There was a man, a member of our church at Cottage Grove, a Black man. He, you know, laughed about all the times he'd been picked up by the police driving along because
yes.
a Black man in a white car had pulled yes. a robbery. So I yes. just, mm-hmm. you know, picked that all the time.
Exactly. I thought it was interesting, too, you know, the choir that we watched, the Heartland Choir and the three other schools. There were three people of color in that 100 and some choir.
What?
And because they didn't have the opportunity, you know.
But it costs to be in it.
It costs a chunk of money, too, and time, and having folks that can drive you to and from wherever they're meeting at.
And have the background on reading music. I mean,
right.
It just keeps going and going, and you know, it's just second nature for us.
I was intrigued by Max, I think her name was, and she made a video on the LGBTQ day. And
that was a great video, yeah.
I want to go back to One Voice and see what else they're doing and whether we can participate more in that, or I don't know. I just want to know more about that.
That was so fascinating, and all the different variances of L or B or G or Q and plus. What?
We discovered that there's no DNA reason for race, that we're all the same. It's the pigmentation that changes that. What about LGBTQ? Is there DNA that... Have they discovered that? Like, do scientists know? I don't.
John,
I don't know. Yeah, I have more questions. You're shaking your head, John. Unmute yourself, though, if you're going to answer it.
Almost. You're almost there.
There you go.
That nobody's ever found a genetic difference.
No genetic reasoning for the
That's
different
what I've read. I'm not the,
attractions or know,
I haven't kept up on my PhD in genomics, but I think that's right.
I fully believe I could stand on the playground as a recess teacher supervising the kids and tell you which second graders were going to fall into some area of that category. It's not a choice. There's no way it's a choice. We all come prepackaged, and that is something you can see, the not feeling like they fit in, the not fitting the norm, if there's a norm ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still in touch with many, many, many students, and I'm pretty accurate.
Isn't that amazing?
And later on, meeting those kids as high schoolers and thinking, yeah.
We were
correct and hope their lives are going well. And each year their lives seem to get better. So we're all making headway in our understanding of that. But I just have
the
a
laws
lot of
are helping that. The laws making a difference with a law. And I just, you know, those are some of the things that granted each individual state, but they can get to that state, or they could, you know, I mean, literally to another state.
Is there just two genders? Why do we have to make this so complicated? But are there just two genders? I mean, there's pieces of DNA materials that make you male or female, but is there just the X and Y? Are there no other combinations?
Or, or a convoluted chromosome.
Well, that's
just a little tweak.
Yeah, that, I don't
know. It was happened maybe because mom, you know, might have drank a warm glass of milk that was a little tainted or something. I mean, it, you know, it, who knows what causes it?
Gone there, but okay.
But yeah. Who knows what causes?
Yeah.
And, you know, if I can a quote from someone that I respect very much, they're all God's children. They all belong in God's family. It doesn't matter.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Totally.
Mm-hmm. We chose to be Presbyterian.
So
well, that's a choice. That's a choice.
So we could, yeah, we could definitely dig deeper into that. Some of, you know, and it depends perhaps on how deeply, you know, how deeply one wants to go or how much time one wants to spend in class. But yeah, making sense of just sexual and gender diversity. And some of that is honestly as not simple, certainly not easy, but as kind of straightforward as noticing that there do exist non-Euro-American cultures with more than two genders. That
oh really?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
So the idea that for instance, that there is only, you know, that there are only sort of two binary choices of gender. It's just not universally understood. Now, you know, there's more depth and nuance and detail to get to in that, right? Just because something exists in a culture doesn't necessarily make it so. As we just, you know, we've just been dealing with mm-hmm. with cultures of racism, right? So nothing is so straightforward as to say, oh, that exists, therefore. But it does have the tendency to say, oh, maybe this is not as obvious as I thought it was.
Because so, we are not living in a foreign country who is used to those types of things.
Right.
I mean, that's a normality for maybe some cultures. I mean, like national.
Right.
I do know that when Jessica came home from Korea, she was carried by a Northwest employee because she had a cleft lip and palate. She could be transported to us. So we did not travel. And she came home with blue clothing. Matt also had a cleft lip and palate and was transported to us in the same manner. And he came home wearing all pink clothing and his extra outfit were pink. And in Korea, it's kind of the opposite. They don't have a blue is boy and pink is girl thing like Americans seem to have come up. But when they do, they put the girls in the blue and the boys in the pink. Whether that's still the way of the world today, I don't know, but it was years ago. So I always found that interesting. Like, that's not a given. There's so many things we think of as givens that aren't. There's always more to learn. So,
oof.
Yeah. Okay, y'all, we've got more to learn. So come back next week. We will learn about how COVID has brought us together. And we will, I'll chart out some future topics for us and see where we want to go. So,
So did I do my homework already? I told you what I wanted.
Yes, you did your homework. You can do more homework if you want to.
Okay.
There's all the extra credit you can eat. So.